Stephen will be presenting today on equipping university students to document their ancestral languages.
Thank you, Gary. And this work is joint work with two other collaborators, Anastasia Tsai, Department of PNG Studies at Divine Word University in Madang on the north coast of Papua New Guinea, and Philip Tama, and also to some extent Anne-Marie Wanamp at the University of Goroka in the Eastern Highlands province of Papua New Guinea, done over the last 2 years. The work's been supported by several universities, along with a small grant from the Firebird Foundation for Anthropological Research and hardware donated by Olympus Corporation, plus logistical support from the Papua New Guinea branch of SIL. Three quick advertisements. Sorry. Are you trying to find language resources? Please check out a new search service we've just announced yesterday, search.languagearchives.org. Online, lovely, powerful search. If you're looking for a long-term home for your language documentation, then keep an eye on the Language Commons. It's a new collection hosted in the Internet Archive, where linguists will be able to upload their data collections with a Creative Commons license of their choice. Languagecommons.org. If you think about writing programs, then consider the Natural Language Toolkit. Lovely, lovely software for analysing languages. Okay, moving on. Why should we care about equipping university students to document their ancestral languages? Let's back up a bit. The fact of language shift means that many discourse genres and much cultural knowledge of languages is gone well before the language is moribund. I'll just take that as a given. So, for example, Usarufa, famous for its ISO code, USA, has 1,200 speakers according to Ethnolog out of a population of 5,000. But I found only a handful of the oldest speakers know the stories and the songs. So you might think, since there are speakers of Usarufa who are still in their 20s, that we probably have 50 years in which to document this language. Actually, we probably only have more like 5 years in order to get high-quality documentation of this language. More alarmingly, we actually don't know the vitality status of many languages in New Guinea. So, what's the traditional model for a language documentation project? I hope I'm not being too rhetorical here. So, preserving the world's languages is obviously a daunting task. The current model is this three-year sponsored project, give or take. The Western-trained linguist goes to the language area, faces a whole bunch of logistical issues concerning travel, health, security, culture, language even, learns some of the language, records it, analyzes it, takes it away, writes a PhD thesis, etc., and gets their data. What are some of the issues with this traditional approach that I'm parodying, perhaps? Well, when you factor in the training costs for perhaps the PhD program, maybe it's going to be about $500,000 per language, roughly, order of magnitude. Even then, the materials that are collected might not become available, or might be available after 3 years, or perhaps never. The scale, maybe 25 to 50 new projects per year, give or take. Contradict me if you wish. So we're saying in a decade, 250 to 500 new language projects will start, roughly. Yet we're saying that for many languages, we have much less than a decade in order to get the good stuff. So in other words, endangered languages are not being documented quickly enough. It would be really good to document languages at about 10 times the current rate. In other words, 2,500 to 5,000 in the next decade. Okay, I'm dreaming. Obviously, there's not the linguists to go around, so what many of you and I are involved in doing is training local speakers to take on some of that work. And what I'm presenting to you today is a particular approach to doing that. A key factor is to use appropriate technology, and in recent years, digital voice recorders, such as this one, have gained reasonable quality of audio storage and decent amount of capacity. And they're fairly easy to use, with large controls brought out on the front. How hard is it to train people to use these? Can we put the language preservation task in the hands of the speech community, in particular people with no more Western education than primary school level? Well, I've found that with suitable training they can be equipped to record a variety of oral discourse genres from a broad cross-section of the speech community, then provide additional content that permits the material to be interpreted by other people, including people who don't speak the language. The result then is an audio collection with time-aligned transcriptions and translations, a substantial archival resource. But I can hear some people saying, if you're getting uncontrolled content in noisy environments on low-quality hardware, and you say this is archival quality, what are you talking about? Well, yes, if it's the only recording we have on a language, it's going to be something worth preserving. Let's take that as a given. But some people might be saying, well, you're taking resources away from linguists who are going to be able to do the professional job. They're really the only people who can. Well, in this particular case, there's only been $10,000 of sponsorship. It's half used up so far, and all the hardware was donated. So trying to see if we can do it with a shoestring budget. That's part of the idea. So to the professional linguist that's preoccupied with controlling the technology and the environment, let's just observe that recording under the direct control of the linguistic community is a very effective way to get naturalistic recordings, and it empowers the speakers. And these are obviously things that are important for promoting language vitality. More generally, even if the recordings are completely useless, the awareness of language vitality is important. So self-reported ability with the language might not agree with actual. Maybe it's good to identify the people who know the stories and the songs. We might lay the groundwork for a full project and have, using methods like this, which cast a very broad net, have simply managed to find places which are really ready, which are ripe, where the right constellation of individuals, skills, knowledge are concentrated and they're ready to go. As many of you have probably experienced, there can be a distinction between an oral commitment given to the foreign researcher who's there briefly and what actually happens after they go. So in this particular case, one comes back a year later and sees with all these recorders who actually did something, who's ready to do something on their own. It also has impact on credibility, so we can establish language documentation as a legitimate pursuit at the village level, raise awareness of language endangerment, promote pride in the language, knowledge and respect for the people who know the stories, etc. And of course, training has the possibility of getting good practices established early. For instance, simple record keeping or metadata is really good, obviously. We don't want to just record things that we don't know anything about. Another more subtle one that I've noticed in Papua New Guinea is the tendency of people to want to collect word lists only. And so training to say, look at all these different oral discourse genres that you have. Let's record those too. So the philosophy here then is to train and equip generously, see who responds, learn from the mistakes, and then maybe in a later full project, allocate resources appropriately. So the Bold PNG project was what I did as for my sabbatical a couple of years ago from the standpoint of a computer scientist wanting to learn what are the issues with data management in linguistic fieldwork and language documentation. Basic oral language documentation is a methodology for language documentation that was introduced by Will Ryman at the first ICLDC here 2 years ago and described in two recent articles which are both available online. So here's a lightning overview. So you can read about Bold elsewhere, but I just wanted to set the scene. The initial task is audio capture, collecting primary texts. That's a fairly straightforward thing, but there's issues with microphone placement. If you're monitoring a conversation, are you going to move this microphone between the two speakers and somehow take control of the turns and maybe undermine the normal discourse dialogue processes of turn taking? No. Can we use a trusted member of the community? In this case, although I was holding the equipment, I was training this man who was the language worker, and he then went out and did all this work without me present. People were happy to record themselves, especially personal narratives. They liked to produce the dirt on their neighbour, so we had to talk about that as well. That doesn't go in the archive. They're happy to carry it around. It could be secreted somewhere on their body very easily, you know, captured. And it actually looked like a mobile phone from a distance. And, you know, people weren't... didn't feel insecure carrying around. People were happy to interview those that they met on the roadside and elicit stories. And of course, in this oral culture, it's very easy to get these stories. When I've tried training people in Australia with Westerners, I get three little pigs and things like that. It's kind of tragic what we get there. What are some of the issues? The content's only accessible to speakers of the language when it's the original narratives, so we must get translations. Of course, people might not be able to read and write, so we elicit oral translation. Another problem is that the original speech may be difficult to make out clearly because you might have done the recording in a traditional ceremony. There might be a lot of other responses going on, music, noise, far-field recording, and so on. So we do re-speaking, which involves the second voice recorder, play pause, and having a near-field recording of the phrase by phrase. And the third issue is the balance of the collection. When one is giving these out to a group of people who are walking around collecting audio, you get a very unbalanced collection. It's focused on personal narratives. You get less, say, procedural discourse, for example, and not many prayers, things like that. So what we did, since the oral translation and re-speaking took 10 times real time, is that we took a tenth. We selected one-tenth of the recorded materials based on their, the text selection criteria. The cultural and linguistic value: did it have idiomatic use of language with culturally significant content and rich vocabulary? Was it diverse? You know, folklore, personal narrative, public address, dialogues, greetings, discussions, instructions, parent-child singing, so on. And was the recording quality of a reasonable level that we could listen? And then play it back in the entirety. So the oral annotation project protocol involved the left person on the left controlling playback, and the one on the right, after each phrase, re-speaking or translating what they heard. And here's a little video. Can I plug in my audio? Let's try this again. Thank you. We're going to get blasted here, aren't we? Oh, power from USB. Careful re-speaking involves saying what you just heard, producing any what you thought might be grammatically incorrect phrases, but feeling free to correct disfluencies. And it's so much easier to transcribe that, would you believe? Thanks, Karen. Get the idea. Then we get people to do transcription from the careful re-speaking and the translation, cross-check, create the metadata in their logbooks. We don't call it metadata. Here's the screenshot of the logbook. That gets converted into a PDF and collated with the audio recordings. And then try to get some idea of what it is to archive an endangered language on the web. So how do we scale this up? Could we get 10 hours of audio in each of 100 languages within a year? That's what I asked myself. It's kind of ridiculous, but anyway. It started by running these three workshops a year ago now. Three universities. Basically the three mainland universities. It used 100 of these voice recorders, or the precursor version that was donated to the project by Olympus. 100 students spread across the three universities, mostly final year undergraduate students doing different courses. So it was integrated into each course as appropriate for their undergraduate degree. And this website has got lots of information and all the resources we used, and you can surf there if you like. boldpng.info. Idea was in three stages: capture 10 hours of audio, then select a tenth of that for oral annotation. So that's the re-speaking and the oral translation into a second voice recorder. And then of that tenth, select a tenth again. So from 10 hours to 1 hour to 6 minutes. In other words, select two stories, maybe a narrative and a dialogue, and transcribe and translate that in text. There's a lot of logistical issues for me to deal with. Each of these had to be engraved with its own unique ID, and then the folder inside the thing had to have the same ID. The date had to be set. I trained students at these three locations. There are other community members and elders involved who are endorsing the project and supporting it. One logistical issue was keeping track of voice recorders. We started out with 36. After 3 days of training, we lost track of 8 of them. There was a bunch of first-year students. The first-year students weren't even invited. I don't know what they were doing there. And they somehow thought that getting one of these things was what they got for coming to the training. They've since got them back, but yeah, interesting. The training involved people from a dean down to an undergraduate student. So even the staff members, it was just a very leveling experience for everybody. And I think the students found that quite powerful. I used students, not the staff, for the demonstrations so that I could correct them without any loss of face. We used Google Docs to transfer our metadata so that from afar I could monitor what they were doing. And you'll see all these at boldpng.info. And in their paper logbooks, there was this stuff glued in the back, which is a complete summary of the process on 3 pages. On top of all that, I trained the collaborators in project management and how to transfer files to the mass storage device for backup and so on. So what actually happened? Divine Word University Madang, it was a final year course on PNG cultures, 32 students, and I think 31 languages represented. Can you believe that? Their job in this course was to collect 5 pieces. I'll let you read them. There's this whole stack of issues they encountered. Most of the students did not have a good command of their ancestral language. They grew up in the town. They identified with the language, and they went back there, but they didn't know the language very well. Only one out of the 32 could produce and translate narratives. Most of them found the other mother tongue speakers locally or in their village to record. And I've got some examples of the project work that they did. So let me see if I can This was probably one of the most encouraging things to see. Let me just see. Oh, here we go. So this is a student assignment. And let me see if I can go for the screen on that. Yeah. And I guess I've got to go a bit smaller. Sorry about this. Bear with me. So this student has used a table in Microsoft Word to capture the identical metadata that was specified. Then we have a transcription of the recording. So the student didn't feel comfortable to actually... this is a translation. The student didn't transcribe the original recording, just provided a Tok-Pisin translation and then an English paraphrase. So we didn't get all that we wanted, but we got something. And that's a legend, something on nonverbal communication, procedural discourse, how to make a grass skirt, and so on. Let me show you another example. This is Kavili from the Trobriand Islands. Bit hard to see perhaps, but here is a transcription in the vernacular and then a translation of a legend, explanation of a some sort of lace they wore on the forehead. Here's a procedural discourse, instructions how to make a shell cap, traditional coconut shell cup, and so on. How to heal a sick person, traditional medicine. And then the fifth topic was something of their own choice, the origins of a dance chant. So there's a bunch more of that kind of stuff. But I wanted to show you the instances of the work just so that you'd see that it was just fully integrated into their own course, in this case, PNG studies, not linguistic fieldwork. All right, technology. I want to do switch back to my slides. I'm going to skip forward. Sorry, I'm on the wrong slide. Some of the reflections. It was really moving to hear the old people tell their stories. We were excited to hear our language spoken. We want our children to learn our language, so we will have to learn it in order that our children will learn it. Thanks. It was difficult to record our stories because the students didn't know their language. At the other sites, it was much more difficult. So at the University of Goroka, there was a 2-month student strike. The university did not function for a whole 2 months. And the course that this was fitted into is a course on the local language of Goroka called Alakano. And this task given to the students was to go out and collect word lists in other languages and translate those word lists into Alakano. That's how to make it fit. So in spite of my emphasis on text collection, we still only got word lists. At UPNG in Port Moresby, which is the oldest linguistics department, and it was the only one which actually had a field methods class, they actually weren't able to do anything because of funding issues. And I'm not sure what they were, because none of this depended on funding. Students had funding because of their scholarships to come to Port Moresby from their village, and they were just supposed to take these back out with them on their long breaks. So no funding was actually expected or required. Okay, there was 4 really serious issues. Google Docs really didn't work. Authenticating and navigating through spreadsheets was beyond the technical experience of my collaborators, much less the students. The file management, we ended up with primary recordings on one machine and secondary recordings with re-speaking and translation on another machine. a logbook with ultimately a scanned image somewhere else. And to collocate all that was not possible for them to do locally. I'm going to go back and do it, but that doesn't scale. I thought it might, but I was wrong. The repository, so safeguarding and synchronizing the distributed activity is not really possible with all these distributed devices. And we couldn't actually reliably segment. If you're trying to control the pause of playback just by listening, you can't actually make an informed judgment about the best playback. At the same time, we can't expect these people to use a waveform viewer to do the segmentation. So that paints a fairly negative picture, although there was all these side benefits that I've already mentioned. However, there's a couple of reasons for hope. One is to do all of this in low-power mobile devices, such as the Seymour software that John Hatton, where are you, John? John Hatton here is developing for managing the workflow on a single machine, capturing speaker demographics and consents, keeping track of the discourse genres that have been recorded and so on. And I have another project, this one, which is trying to use methods from machine translation and digital signal processing to heuristically identify good cutting points of the audio signal. And when multiple people are independently transcribing these using some crowdsourcing techniques to align and normalize the transcriptions, even for languages which have no established orthography. So that's an ongoing sponsored project. The third one is a tone analysis project that's going on for the next 3 years, and we're fitting oral language documentation on the side. The idea is that this is a task that should fit alongside other tasks rather than be the core focus. Okay, I need to finish up. Thank you.
Languages don't have a writing system. I'm assuming that there are.